The End Podcast is brought to you by Emma, email marketing that works for you.
In a world where QR codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron, one podcast has set out to make things right. This is The Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Should I be doing the intro?
Yeah. Is that what you were waiting for? Is that why you just scratched your arm?
Things are changing, so I don't know what's happening now. I don't know if I start off. Am I leading in?
I think you should.
Am I think color you're the commentator now?
Yeah.
Play by play? Hi, everybody.
He has such a good voice. I know. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you. Today on the show, Wonky Donkey, Fantastic Pizza People, Millennials,
again
ruining something again. All that and nothing more. Brought to you by Emma. You deserve a better email marketing platform, so hey, check them out. MyEmma.com. They're friends of ours. Hopefully they're friends of yours at this point. And if not, what is wrong with you? Happy November to those listening to it in a reasonable amount of time.
Was Wonky Donkey your Halloween costume?
I was thinking about it. So Wonky Donkey is something I just heard of. It's a video that's gone viral of a grandmother, Scottish grandmother, reading, this is from The Guardian, by the way, reading a book called Wonky Donkey, which is apparently pretty popular in Australia and New Zealand, but never really outside of that. And I'm going to play a clip of this grandmother reading it to her grandchild, okay? Here we go.
Okay.
And I saw a donkey. Hee-haw! He only had three legs, one eye, and he liked to listen to country music. He was a honky-tonky-winky-wonky donkey. I think I like this book.
Well, and it goes on from there, and the video has been viewed in all different places and then ripped off by a bunch of places and put on millions of times, mostly because of her laugh and the accent by saying donkey, right? All the Shrek fans in the world are loving it. So, home video of a Scottish grandmother's uncontrollable giggles while reading the Wonky Donkey picture book to her baby grandson has sent book lovers around the world rushing to get their hands on a copy, with publishers left scrambling to meet demand. New Zealand Craig Smith's children's book, based on Smith's song of the same name, tells of a three-legged or wonky donkey, adding a new adjective every few pages until it ends with spunky, hanky, panky, cranky, stinky, dinky, lanky, honky, tonky, winky, wonky, donkey. In a recent video made by her daughter, Scottish granny Janice Clark reads a story to her four-month-old grandson Archer and laughs progressively harder as the donkey becomes increasingly bizarre. Oh dear, how can anybody read this seriously, says Clark. This is going to kill me. The video has been viewed more than 3 million times in the last week. Smith told The Guardian that the demand has gone through the roof for the picture book since the video of Clark took off. In New Zealand, his publisher is rushing to print 50,000 more copies with a view for more, while The Wonky Donkey is now also being reprinted in the UK. Amazon in the US and the UK has sold out, while used bookseller Abe Books has sold hundreds of copies used with a massive demand. Although the picture book, which is illustrated by Katz Cowley, has sold more than 1 million copies around the world to date, the majority of that was in Australia and New Zealand, said Smith, who hopes it finds a more of a global readership. Cowley said, while The Wonky Donkey has been a household name in Australia, in 2009, it has not gone anywhere else at this point. I'm so glad Wonky's reputation has finally come to bite him on the bum on this side of the world, thanks to Wonky's guardian granny. I couldn't be more delighted.
And there's no connection between the video and the author, right?
No.
None. So it's not, okay, because at first when I heard it, I thought it was like his mom reading the book or her mom reading the book, but it's totally just like a fan who made this video.
And now we have hired her to read all of our books.
Yeah, millions sold.
Yeah, on marketing. It's amazing. I love that, the organic viral.
Yeah.
Right? Something, it's like the Chewbacca mask lady, right? It's just like, they were just, it's such a revelation of emotion coming out from somebody who's just total joy. I had the Chewbacca mask, when was her laugh was so amazing and funny. And there you go. So if any of you have friends with awesome laughs, just have them read something and you win. Ta-da, 1 million books. But it already gotten to 1 million. I'm like, that's not a niche. That's not like a small, it had only sold 1 million.
It's not in the States. They call it a niche.
Oy, it's a lot of
You have a good laugh.
Ha-ha! Thank you.
I like
you.
It. That's not your laugh, but I like that one, too. Ah. Do you want to know what millennials killed this time?
What now? Other than my soul.
It wasn't a wonky donkey. Mm. So this is from Bloomberg.com. American cheese will never die. It has too many preservatives, but it's melting away. Oh, the cheese puns.
It's a good lead.
One by one, America's food outlets are abandoning the century-old American staple. In many cases, they're replacing it with fancier cheeses. And there's a picture of a Panera 4 cheese grilled cheese. So Wendy's has Asiago, A&W, Canadian locations switched to real cheddar. McDonald's is selling the Big Mac soft orange square of American cheese with a version that does not contain artificial preservatives. So it's still American cheese, but they've fancied it up a little bit. Cracker Barrel, they go on and give all these examples. And so they're saying American cheese is at a crossroads. The product, made famous by the greatest generation, devoured by boomers on the go, and touted as the basis for macaroni and cheese, the well-documented love object of Gen X, has met its match with millennials, demanding nourishment from ingredients that are both recognizable and pronounceable. So it says, data shows U.S. sales of processed cheese, including brands like Kraft Singles and Velveeta, a mainstay of delicacies such as Ballpark Nachos, are projected to drop 1.6% this year. Is that a big drop?
Yeah, when it's, you know,
the fourth millions. Straight year for declines. So what do you think?
Well, any decline is not good, right? Because in this world of growth and everything else, any decline, like if Pepsi goes down 1.6% or something, that's also a big deal. So in Canada, we never called it American cheese, right? So for me, it's either processed cheese, or when you're younger, we called them cheese slices or Kraft Singles, right? So I go to my grandparents' house and I can have a cheese slice, and it was a little wrapped up rectangle or square in the fridge, gross. And you open it up and you eat some plastic cheese.
I never ate that. I think it's gross.
And people love American cheese, not just because the word America is in it, but because of its low melting point, right? That's how you get the real gooey grilled cheeses out there is people use American cheese. They're not using cheddar on it. The American cheese is the grilled cheese.
Not for me. I never ate American cheese on grilled cheese.
I was saying, some of us grew up in different environments, and we could only have that slice of cheese, and that's what happens. It doesn't taste great to me, though. Like, you can say, it's processed. Well, all cheese is processed, though. Like, let's not get all hoity-toity on American cheese here. Cheese is not natural. It's not a natural occurring thing. No, but
there are healthier processes than some healthier.
And there's
some
more things with taste. There isn't a lot of taste to American cheese. That's the thing. It's more of a bland kind of taste to it. So I don't prefer it. But that's what you put on nachos. That's what they put on grilled cheese. So I just think it's there's more options. It's not necessarily millennials are killing the cheese.
And it's not even saying that they're eating less cheese.
No.
They're just not or getting that particular
cheese.
There's
more choice, though, too.
Right? There's
more cheese choice. There's artisan cheeses, small
and people
batch
know, I think, more about than what's in their food.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't think it's the millennials.
But I feel bad for the millennials. It's how it compares it to Wonder Bread.
That's true. We'd have more choices. We have more education, meaning access to information. You know, what we should be putting in our bodies, what we shouldn't. It's not millennials' fault. They don't like bland cheese.
Do you know why it was created?
Why?
Says American cheese was born at a time when utility reigned. James and Norman Kraft invented processed cheese in 1916 and sold it in tins to the U.S. military during World War I. Soldiers kept eating it when they returned home, and its popularity soared. It wasn't until 1950 that Kraft perfected the slicing. Soon after came a machine that would individually wrap the slices, and in 1965, Kraft Singles were born. Like Wonder Bread, society marveled at the uniformity of the product, the neatness of the slices, the long shelf life, and its ability to stay moist, even in the desert in the middle of summer at noon. Ingredients include substances found in a chemistry set, which all food does, but okay. Sodium citrate, calcium phosphate, blah, blah, blah. Isn't that neat? That's a neat story. I did not know that Kraft invented processed cheese.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
You know, they don't have Kraft dinner in the U.S.?
I do know that.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that, but yeah. Scott learned that keynoting at
a
Kraft conference.
Kraft's in the States when the VP surprised me at the end of my keynote in front of their entire marketing division at Soldier Field in Chicago and said, hey, so what's your favorite Kraft
product? We should ask people, when you hear Kraft, we should ask the listeners, what are the two, if you got put on the spot right now and people said, okay, what are your two favorite Kraft products, what your two ones will be?
Yeah.
Because they were the same. You said exactly Kraft what I would have said.
And peanut butter.
Yeah. Neither of which.
Apparently, neither of which are in the U.S.
No, they don't make either of those.
In the U.S., it's called mac and cheese.
Yeah.
I said Kraft dinner, peanut butter. The whole audience is like, wow, you have not done your research.
And then all of a sudden, Canada does sort of feel like the moon.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
What? What do you mean you don't have it?
It was weird.
You know, we have mac and cheese. No, it's Kraft dinner. Mm. How would you? Speaking of cheese, this is from CNN.com. A wonderful story here. When Julie Morgan and her husband Rich lived in Battle Creek, Michigan, they would stop by Steve's Pizza for dinner every payday. That was 25 years ago. To celebrate her birthday this year, the couple, who now live in Indianapolis, wanted to take a trip to their favorite pizza place. Instead, they ended up in the ER, where Rich Morgan was told his cancer had worsened and that he had weeks, maybe days, to live. He was placed in hospice care. Steve's Pizza doesn't deliver, but when a manager at the store heard the couple's story, he decided to take two pies to them himself, even though they were 225 miles away. During the course of their marriage, the Morgans moved around several times, but for them, Steve's has always been the benchmark by which all pizzas were measured. Quote, I can't possibly describe how delicious this pizza is, but several moves and all these years later, it's still the gold standard where we've never found a better pizza yet, Julie Morgan wrote on Facebook. When her dad, David Dahlke, found out about their birthday plan and how Rich's sudden diagnosis dashed it, he called Steve's Pizza hoping they might send a note to the couple. I said, I know you're busy. I explained the situation and said, if you ever make it happen, just a text message to Rich and Julie that you're sorry they couldn't make the trip, Dahlke told CNN. That's all he was hoping for, a note. About 5 minutes later, he called me and said, I want to know what kind of pizza they like. It was an unusual request, but Dahlke told him anyway, pepperoni and mushroom. On the other end of the line was Dalton Schaefer, the 18-year-old grandson of Steve, original owner of the pizzeria. Schaefer told Dahlke it was near the end of the night, and as soon as he closed the store, he'd head to the house with their two favorite pizzas. I said, wait a minute. Did you understand that I'm in Indianapolis? I'm not next door, Dahlke said. It's about a 3.5-hour drive between the two cities. But Schaefer said he didn't have to think twice and got on the highway without telling anyone from his family or the store. It was kind of a spontaneous reaction, Schaefer told CNN. I'm happy I did it, and on the trip down, I was happy I was doing it. Dahlke kept the lights on and waited until 2 a.m. when Schaefer pulled into their driveway. I told him to come in, have something to eat, drink. I asked if he wanted me to put him up for the night, but he said, I've got to get up because I've got to go to work the next day. Schaefer wouldn't take any money. He just drove back home, completing the 450-mile, 7-hour journey. His remarkable act a week ago has inspired people everywhere since Julie Morgan posted about it on Facebook. Dahlke said what the world needs is more Daltons. There's so much goodness in the people, and there are people in this world that will stretch out and care and not think twice about it, he said. We're going through grief, but golly, there's something that's good that's happening. And that's the message Schaefer hopes to spread with his act of kindness. I've already gotten a ton of phone calls from people saying they were inspired in the future to help other people and to be able to do things like that. To me, that right there is what I want, he said. I just want people to think about the family and pray for them. CNN posted an update. Since publishing this story, CNN learned that Rich Morgan died Saturday after a 2-year battle with cancer. According to his wife, Julie Morgan, she wrote, he fought so hard and dealt with his illness with incredible grace, courage, and humor. He was a man of faith and integrity who was always driven to do the right thing. There are no words to express how deeply we loved and admired him and how much he loved us in return. Thank you so much for the outpouring of prayers and support.
Oh.
It's amazing. Amazing. And we're the ones, a lot of times, that we shine a spotlight on what's going wrong. And, you know, from a simple thing like a server bringing a wallet back to somebody, to this, that there's good people out
there. It's a pretty incredible story.
That there's good people that, you know, helping others is sewn into their DNA. And we want to keep putting a spotlight on that. So I know your default with us is to share stories that are not great, that we hold brands accountable, but please continue to share these stories with us because it's a wonderful, wonderful, and this was shared by somebody on Twitter to us so we could see it as well. So we're very, very thankful for it. And we're thankful for Emma for always being a part of the show again.
They totally drive 7 hours to bring us pizza.
They would.
Yeah.
Or that pulled pork from Peg Leg Poker as well. You deserve a better email marketing platform from the crew at Emma. So Check them out at myemma.com. They'll hook you up because they hooked us up.
I have a story. It's not so good, though. I kind of feel like we're coming off a high, but... Okay, well, I guess it's kind of good. Anyway, that was a bad way to introduce a story. This is from the cbc.ca. It says, do people say MEC? I say MEC.
Yes.
MEC, Mountain Equipment Co-op.
Acronym.
Acronym, MEC. MEC's commitment to more diverse models and ads is welcome if overdue, say critics. Outdoor equipment company Mountain Equipment Co-op has committed to better representing the diversity of Canadians who love the outdoors after being called out for the use of predominantly white models in its advertising. We need to represent the communities in which our stores are, and we need to represent the diversity that is Canada. And if we don't, we will not remain relevant into the future, said their CEO. So this is kind of interesting because I actually noticed this. So there is an MEC town over from us, and I'm a customer. I get the kids their winter hiking shoes, and I got Tessa a coat this year. And it's just funny to me because it just seems a little late. And I think that's what a lot of people are saying, basically. What I mean, I don't think a brand can be too late in that it's always good that they're making the change now. Like, I don't want them to say, well, we've done this for so long, we'll just stick with this. Like, obviously, so I'm sure it's hard to come out with a big change that you think is important and then get a lot of flack for how long maybe or overdue people think it is. And I'm kind of interested in what you think, how a company should deal with that. Because, yeah, they just say, it says, people are saying, like, what I find astounding is it took them up to the fall of 2018 to realize the Canadian is a diverse country, blah, blah, blah. What do you think about that? Because I bet that's hard. Like, you decide you want to make this big change for the good. We can all agree that it's for the good. And then you spend money and time, and then you get some flack because it took you so long. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think they didn't have to say anything. Most companies are just... change the way they advertise.
That's true.
They don't have to say anything. They can just come out and say, look, this is what we're doing. We want to make sure it's diverse. And I think they kind of stood up and said, we've been wrong. And when I see something like this, then anything, you know, again, I just said it, but we hold brands to task. We bring it up. But at the end of the day, you have to sit down with somebody and say, so what do you want? What do you want them to do? What do they have to do to make you either a customer again or consider being one in the first place if there was a wrong that happened? And sometimes there is nothing. You simply won't use them anymore because of that. And this is the thing. So what do they want to do? Did they stand up? Are they being accountable for their previous actions? Are they creating change for future actions? Because there's the PR speak, which is, we've seen our error, sorry about that, and then not doing anything. And then there's like, look, this is what happens. This is what we're doing. Here we go.
I think it depends a little. I think you're seeing that sort of like, if they did this and said, this is going to be a great source of press, and then they did a splashy thing and they came out into the press and they said, we've been doing this wrong, we're making changes, then they kind of are asking for all the feedback they're going to get, right? Because they're making it a marketing ploy, as opposed to what you said, which is they could just change and maybe no one would even notice. They just change. Because I think when you're going to take that extra step and you're going to say, I'm going to make this change because I know we need to and we want to, but I'm also going to profit off it a bit by making a PR campaign about it. I'm going to get the word out so everyone can think of us as this progressive company. That then you need more. You need programs. You need quality programs. You need extra support for different work. Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you're saying you're going to change your whole company, you're going to change your policies, you're going to change everything, you're going to be this new place, then you're on more solid ground than just saying, we're just going to use models in our advertising that are more representative of the community. Then I think they deserve the flack.
Well, what I found interesting about this was nothing happened to make this happen. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't an incident, which is usually what happens.
That we know of.
But usually what happens here is somebody shares a confidential email saying, well, why, you know, an executive being racist about something or whatever it's going to be. So, you know,
no, but I don't think something happened.
No, but so you have the difference here, though, is that, you know, you had mentioned intent, right? You know, what was the intent of doing this? Was it I think everything is PR. I think every decision a company makes, they always will say, how will this help us as a brand market-wise? I just think that's what a business is. And so every decision is a marketing decision, regardless if it's direct or indirect.
No. But there's a big difference between doing it, your next campaign to be more representative and then letting the campaign speak for itself and saying, we're going to make our next campaign more representative. And then we're going to have another campaign about how representative our new campaign is. That's like doubling down on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
There's a big difference between just putting it out there and getting positive feedback.
There's being inclusive, and then there's just saying, hey, we're being inclusive.
Yeah, it's more push, right? Yeah. It's doubling down on the campaign. I think it's interesting. It's certainly worth, I mean, it's important for sure. And they're a very environmentally, you know, forward-thinking company, and they're a good company that I've ever known of. So hopefully this will be something that goes well for them.
So will this be an example of confirmation bias for us to shop there? It's like Starbucks for me, right? Where I go to Starbucks, and they, you know, we talked about a few episodes ago, but the subsidized daycare and same-sex benefits, they were the first large corporation to do that, and employing veterans. So when I go get a flat white that I do often, I feel good about myself because I'm supporting Starbucks. It supports those people. But I was going there anyways.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, do we feel better about shopping at Mech because they're going
to
do this?
I go to Mech for the quality of the products. I spend more money. It's not cheaper. I spend more money probably because they have the best stuff that I've ever found. Mm. And I love the backpacks and everything. And I grew up with it. We used to make a trip into Toronto once every beginning of school, you know, and get a new school bag and stuff at Mech. So I love that store because I'm a hippie and I have a problem. But I feel almost like a little bad I didn't notice. I guess I should have noticed.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. I don't know. But I'm glad they're doing it.
But again,
it is confirmation for sure.
In our position, we're also privileged, right? We see ourselves in advertising everywhere.
Exactly.
And so that's...
It's not surprising that I didn't notice.
No, right. It's a matter of privilege. Speaking of privilege, you've all hurt your privilege today because you didn't send us more made-up words. So there's nothing
this
week.
We don't have anything?
Not this week.
That's so sad. Or maybe we should just pretend that we have to save them up for the live one that we already did now. If you're listening to this, I guess it's done, right?
So that's what we're doing. That's what we did. Doing. We did it.
Time is weird, right?
It's not linear.
It's almost Christmas.
Oh, no. Well, there you go. Merry frickin' Christmas. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.